Hello, this is Meredith Irvine, editor of compensationstandards.com. Welcome to the Pay and Proxy Podcast. My guests today are Dan Ladin and Matt Vanuk of Compensation Advisory Partners. Welcome, Dan and Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They just came out with the results of their annual analysis of non-employee director comp programs among the 100 largest U.S. public companies. So they're here today to talk about their findings. The information they'll talk about is based on 2024 proxy disclosures. Before we jump in, Dan and Matt, can you just share a little bit with our listeners about your backgrounds?
Sure. So I'm Dan Ladin. I'm one of the partners at Compensation Advisory Partners, been doing executive and director compensation for about 25 years at this point, working with boards and management on all issues as it relates to aligning their compensation programs with shareholders.
Matt Vanuk, one of the other partners at CAP. I've been doing this for about 20 years. And Dan and I have been doing this specific study together for nearly 15 years at this point. And certainly, while the study is focused amongst the largest 100 U.S. public companies by revenue, we also have plenty of experience from the largest public companies down to microcap companies or private companies as well. So the experience runs the gambit, but this is focused on the 100 largest companies today.
I want to thank you both for doing this study for as long as you have. It's always so helpful when studies continue annually and you can actually see trends over a longer period. So I appreciate it on behalf of our team.
Thank you.
Well, so jumping into the study, can you start just by telling us what you found in terms of quantum of director comp versus prior years and kind of with that, if you have any expectations for next year?
Yes. So what we found in terms of quantum was at median, or the middle company in the data set, we found that pay was flat at $325,000 for standard non-employee directors, or excluding additional pay for leadership roles. We would expect that in the next year to go up kind of low to mid single digits, which is more of the historical norm over time. This year, there was an increase as, what's normal for companies is to review their director pay program and consider changes to it collectively every 2 or 3 years. So if they're changing every 2 to 3 years, we have some years where things end up being flat. But I would add to that just that $325,000 is one of the several factors that does contribute to attracting and retaining kind of the talented people that really contribute to long-term success of companies. So this is something to keep an eye on, but also another reason you see it moving low to single digits over time and increases and being fairly modest is because these people, these directors, they really do not want their pay to stand out. So when we look at that 325,000, I would add the difference between 25th percentile and top quartile or 75th percentile is only about 15%. So there's also continues to be a tight band in compensation amongst the top 100 companies. Dan, anything you'd add there?
No, I think that's right. I think we've hit a stabilization point with director comp compared to we did see it accelerate a fair amount 3 to 5 years ago, coming out of COVID and everything else, people put it on pause. And now they got to where they wanted to be. And now I do think we're in maintenance mode for director comp at this point.
That makes sense. I mean, it seemed to correlate with increasing director responsibilities too, and the committees taking on more, and the role of the committees has expanded so much in recent years. Just moving on to structure, what did you find in terms of, the use of annual retainers and meeting fees and, pay mix, form of equity, et cetera?
Yeah, so we've seen pretty consistent structure year over year, but just going back to your point about the role of committees and everything else, we used to see a lot more differentiation for committee members. So like audit would get a lot more, relatively speaking, than comp, than non-gov. We've actually seen a lot of the member compensation go away as you've seen the role of non-gov, perhaps ESG and succession are coming in there. So that's become an issue for them that's taking up more time. Comp is always more in the spotlight these days. So that's been getting a lot more attention in the last 10 years. And audit has always been the heavy lift, but the difference has diminished at this point. In terms of other aspects of the structure, pretty consistent with just under two-thirds of the equity, 63% being in equity, 37% in cash. Very few companies are using meeting fees. It's about 6% of companies right now. So, the one interesting thing I'd say on that is you still see a handful of companies who are paying meeting fees if the number of meetings exceeds a certain threshold. And that's effectively a self-correction mechanism that if we happen to be in a year where we're just asking for a lot more time than we might in a typical year, then we're just going to compensate in a nominal way. You're still only talking about 1,000 to 1,500 a meeting probably, but it's just recognition of that incremental lift during that year.
Yeah, I'd agree, Dan. I think what we've seen is simplification of pay programs and simplification of pay programs most amongst the largest companies. And we'd expect more of that simplification in other size companies in years to come. You know, one of the ways we refer to the simplification is an advisory fee pay model versus an attendance fee pay model. And you know, this advisory fee pay model makes a lot of sense when all outside directors are active contributors to board responsibilities, when there's a lot of work happening outside of boardrooms. So given, you know, facts and circumstances at each company considered, we generally recommend, you know, simplification pay programs for directors and this advisory fee pay model. The other item I'd call out is that equity awards. When Dan mentioned 63% of pay, annual pay for outside directors is delivered in equity. Only two companies amongst the entire top 100 are delivering that equity through stock options. I think that that's something that still surprises some people. And so I think that's something that we still see more prevalence of in other size groups. But again, this follows the line of thinking with ownership, direct ownership, the shift to restricted stock units or deferred stock units, and also follows the line of thinking with simplification. I mean, it's much more straightforward, the ownership and the amount of compensation that's awarded on a year-to-year basis with RSUs or deferred stock units versus stock options.
That makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate you addressing what trends you're seeing flowing down to mid-cap and smaller cap companies too, because that's helpful information for our audience. So you touched on this a little bit, board leadership, committee membership, committee leadership. Can we talk a little bit more about maybe the board leadership and the committee leadership piece and quantums there, what you're seeing in terms of trends for those?
Sure. This is an important area. And this is one of the areas where we see more potential movement in the future. There is an awful lot of time expected from individuals in board leadership roles, be it a non-executive chair of the board, a lead outside director, or a committee chair, for example, of the audit committee, the compensation committee, or the nominating governance committee, or equivalent. And you know, we think about an often stated ballpark for a public company director, material public companies, about 250 hours per year. These individuals in board leadership roles, there's considerable extra time expected. So before we get into the precise numbers, if we think about how much more is a lead director paid than a standard director, it's about 15% more. When we're talking about the committee chairs, how much more are they paid than a standard director? It's about 10% more. Yet being in those roles comes considerable additional potential time requirement and also reputational risk. So we think there's plenty of room for the amount of compensation that's given to these roles to be reconsidered in future years, albeit there's usually pushback from individuals in those roles not wanting to stand out in terms of their pay. So again, about 15% more for a lead director and about 10% more for a committee chair. And what that translates to is, again, amongst the 100 largest companies, at median, the additional pay for a lead director is about $50,000, most often additional cash compensation. And at 75th percentile, it's $75,000. We've seen indications of data that median will go up in the next 1 to 2 years. So right now, there's buckets of data points within the data. And between 50,000 and 75,000, there are very few examples. So in the next 1 to 2 years, we think that 50,000 median is likely to shift up to about 75,000. And even that $25,000 increase, if that were to occur, it's still fairly nominal for the additional asks placed on that role. So that's the lead independent director. And for committee chairs, primarily the three main committees that we'll talk about are the audit, compensation, nominating, governance committee. If you rewind a few years ago, the audit was paid the most of a premium for the audit committee chair role. And the premium for the compensation committee chair and the non-gov committee chair, at least amongst these 100 largest companies, was equal. Over the past few years, we've seen the audit committee chair remain the most with a median additional pay, again, typically cash retainer of $30,000. But then we've seen the compensation committee chair be the second highest with a median of $25,000. And for the nominating governance committee chair, we've seen that be a bit behind the comp with a median of $20,000. So we've seen some differentiation, but from our perspective, typically market data is one input to how much you should be paying for these roles. Another, very importantly, it should be internal company philosophy. So do we want these roles to be paid different? Is $5,000 worth making a distinction? Where in the market do we want to pay for different roles? What's similar, what's different about the expectations of our company for each of these committees versus others? You can find that in the committee charters. These things are not standard across companies. So audit is paid the most, followed by compensation committee chair, followed by non-gov committee chair. But that's not to say that's right for each company. I mean, Dan, what would you say on this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think indicatively that hierarchy makes sense in terms of compensation. I think getting very practical and being in some of the conversations where the conversation is, should we increase the lead director or should we increase audit, comp, and non-gov? The individuals actually in those conversations are often very reluctant to get an increase. You've seen, the range between median and 75th on lead director, for example, creep up a little bit. The range used to be $15,000 from 50 to 65. Now it's 50 to 75,000. But there really is a practical aspect of this that, they're not looking to stand out. They're not looking to get that much more and to sit in the meeting, even if they're not voting on their own pay, to get an increase is a very awkward conversation when, yeah.
And when you note that they don't want to stand out, in my experience, that seems both from a public, shareholder, stakeholder facing perspective, but also among their fellow directors. That can be awkward, right?
Absolutely. Because I think, these directors who are in leadership roles and on boards still look at it as we're a group that's supposed to be working cohesively together in the best interest of shareholders. So they may not be wanting to signal a difference either. Obviously, there's more time and everything else, so they're comfortable with some differentiation. But, a director is a director, I think, is the philosophy as well. And we're really here for the shareholders.
And I think, Matt, you had mentioned just the amount of work that's happening outside of meetings for directors, too. So much of that additional work for the board chair or the lead independent director is not as visible to their fellow directors, right? Because it's outside meeting time. Even though they're leading meetings, there's so much prep. And the amount of time that prep takes isn't necessarily visible to the group.
Yes, it's the prep. It's more meetings with the CEO or other company leadership. Oftentimes, it's also, especially at the largest companies, more time spent with shareholders. And that time with shareholders can be considerable, far outpacing any norms for typical time commitments when there are issues that need to be addressed.
Absolutely. Those engagement responsibilities are huge. So one of the more kind of interesting developments, and I think, Dan, you touched on this earlier in the podcast, in the director compensation arena in the last 5 to 10 years probably, is shareholder approved limits on director compensation. What did you see there in terms of those limits in the latest proxy disclosures?
So that also has been pretty stable. Around 75% of companies have the shareholder approved limits. And it's all as a result of a handful of cases on excessive director compensation, with the philosophy, if shareholders approve a limit, then you inherently are protected under the business judgment rule as a director. These limits are much higher than the actual pay, and that's the intent. I mean, a third of them are 5x what the normal pay is. From an advisory standpoint, I do believe it's a good practice to carve out if chairman of the board, for example, or other lead position from the limit, just because you may find yourself in a strategically different world down the road, and you might want to appoint a chairman who is relatively active in the day-to-day. And carving it out gives you that flexibility. It's not majority practice, that carve-out, but I think we are seeing a slight tick-up. And the reason that continues to work is you have the director limit there. And the whole theory there is directors are inherently conflicted in approving their own pay. But by carving out a chairman role or something else, that person can recuse themselves from the vote. And therefore, that conflict of interest goes away. And I do think that we're going to start seeing that tick up a little bit. We're seeing it with our clients a bit. We're seeing attorneys push for that a little bit more than before as well. And it won't happen overnight, because companies are not necessarily going to go out to shareholders with that particular change. But they will go as they're renewing their shareholder approved plan to allow for that change. So, every 3 to 5 years, they might go for that, depending on if they have a separate director plan. or if the director's equity plan is falls under the omnibus plan for the overall corporation.
I agree with all that, Dan. I'd say, you know, rewind 10 years, about we're seeing some of this come up. Even up till recently, there was some litigation around Tesla. So this is still in the news, director pay levels. But one of the questions we get asked for this is, do we expect this to lead to, say, on director pay votes like we see with executives? And the answer from us at this point in time is, you know, bold underlined, no. Where there have been shareholder proposals on this type of thing in the past year, you look at the Russell 3000, it was less than 10 such proposals. And in each case, they got 3% or less shareholder support. So while these things can kind of hit the news, what we don't expect them to be something that's required anytime soon. But what we do foresee, directors don't want to be in the news with things like that. So what we do foresee is even greater expectations from board members for information communications regarding their pay. Am I an outlier? Am I not an outlier? Do we have good process? What is good process? Confirming all of that. And in terms of good process, is there a compensation philosophy? Where in market do we want to pay? And what is market? Do we have any principles about our pay that could help define pay mix? How often do we review director pay? Is there a standard? Are we following our philosophy? Do we have any unique considerations going on? How do we think our time commitment compares to norms? Things like this. Some good process that checks in on all these things and a regular cadence that follows a predefined philosophy that can indicate to the directors whether or not they're an outlier just goes a long way unto itself. No surprises is a good motto, Dan, for any consultant. I think we both say that line regularly, but this is a great instance of that. No surprises, but while we don't expect this to be lead to same director pay, you know, it's still on top of that, directors just don't want their pay to be a distraction for the company. So they really do want the information to say, I am not an outlier here.
Yeah, and the only thing I was going to add to that, I think where sometimes companies beyond the top 100, you know, actually mid-cap and a little higher, where they sometimes get into a little bit of trouble here is maybe when they were smaller, they had fixed shares. So I get 5,000 shares each year. And they don't necessarily migrate to a fixed value as that value of the stock grows. And all of a sudden, 5,000 shares might have been $100,000 5 years ago, and now it's $400,000. And then you start to really draw attention. So that is the one thing I would suggest as companies grow and the stock expands. If you don't have a fixed value now, seriously consider it.
Especially with the volatility we've seen.
Absolutely.
And the fact that companies don't review these pay programs annually.
Absolutely.
Well, those were some great recommendations already. But in light of your study, your results, do you have any other kind of general suggestions, takeaways, anything on that front for folks involved in either setting or disclosing director comp?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd start with communication education. You can get the design of director pay program right in terms of, you know, aligning with the philosophy, being reasonable relative to market, et cetera. But it's really important. I think a lot of companies kind of miss the mark in terms of, do their directors understand their pay program well? Are they appropriately impacting perceived value through good communication and education? There's room for more of that many times. The other one, we touched on it, but just to come back to it, is board leadership roles. We do expect to see ongoing consideration of what's the right amount for the premiums going forward, as the 10 to 15% distinction in pay is far from representing the distinction in time expectations and reputational risk. So I would say better communication expectation is an area many companies could focus on and really get very positive reactions from directors. With a little time, go a long way in terms of positive reaction. And again, board of leadership roles, 10 to 15% distinction is really not enough given what they're doing, from my perspective, at least. Dan, how about you?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And the only thing I was going to add on recommendations or kind of suggestions is, you know, for directors, especially at mid-cap companies, a lot of them aren't looking to sell the shares they're getting, but they may not have a deferral plan to allow them to defer them. And we've come into a lot of companies in that kind of size range and actually been surprised, to be honest, that they don't have a mechanism for allowing directors to just defer the RSUs that they receive. And you could keep it simple. This is, you don't have to make it a complex plan or anything else, just a plain vanilla deferral that allows a director to defer their shares until a specific time or till they come off the board. And those are very favorably received by directors. And the optics of not selling shares is a positive for shareholders. So it's kind of a win-win. But it's something that a lot of companies in that size range aren't necessarily thinking about day to day. So I would definitely take a look at that as well.
You know, Dan, another thing that just gets me to think about talking about other data sets that would also align with Meredith's question is for any directors that listen to this podcast or for any individuals that kind of give directors information related to this podcast, directors will Google or look up, what do directors make at this type of company? The answer from that information is almost always going to be from public companies. So if you are a private company director, the data is oftentimes materially different, but it's important in those cases that you understand distinctions between private companies and public companies, time also distinct from pay levels and time commitments, and do they fit with your situation? But when you talk about different size cuts for public companies or private companies, there are some different considerations than the top 100. The top 100 are certainly trendsetters, but that's not to say that things just go down linearly. There are some different considerations by industry, by company stats, type, public, private, et cetera. So really, I think it's very important to remember that. I think the other one, Dan, that we talk about sometimes is, are there any opportunities to make your company stand out in a positive way? Not everyone does this, but we provide additional, you know, reimbursements for attending director, certain director education things. Not everyone does this, but we have this deferral program, and this, you may feel, we believe this is going to be good for you and it's good for us. But to also go a little bit out of your way to be different can be a good thing, where you're not an outlier, but you're a little different than some companies that could be in a positive way.
Perfect. I agree wholeheartedly with all of those suggestions. This was a great overview of your study. For our listeners, you can check out the full report, which has additional suggestions from the CAP team. That's posted in our director compensation practice area on compensationstandards.com. Thanks everyone for listening. And thanks again to Dan and Matt for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.